Well, there are few authors who are able to tell a story in such an informative and enjoyable way as Jerry Apps. He's done it for many, many years, and we're lucky that he has a new book out that can help deepen your appreciation of agriculture in the state. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Jerry's most recent book is titled Wisconsin Agriculture, A History, and he'll talk about the book with us here right now, and we're certainly inviting your questions and comments as we move along. Jerry's been a guest many, many times on the show. He's written a number of books. Horse-Drawn Day is one, Campfires and Loon Calls, The Quiet Season, Remembering Country Writers. And Jerry, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us.
It's always fun to be here, Larry.
And I want to give our listeners a chance to join in. You may have a question, a comment, or experience to share as we talk today. Call in. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And here we've got this is the first book on Wisconsin, the agriculture history, in more than 100 years.
Since 1922.
Oh.
Yeah, that was the last quote-unquote comprehensive history. It's, Larry and listeners, it's impossible to put in one volume the history of Wisconsin agriculture. I want to say that right up front. And in 1922, the author of that book also said, I can't get it all in here. But, my goodness, what has happened since 1922 is a whale of a lot of agricultural history. And I did the best I could. Let's put it that way.
Well, I tell you, I always enjoy your writing, but I'm going to say right up front, I cannot believe the quality of the photos. And the color photos, the up-to-date photos, they're absolutely outstanding. And that's, I would expect that, frankly, from
sure.
you and from the publisher. But the old photos, I have never seen old photos, the quality of the old photos to be better. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it took some really good work to bring those old photos up to the quality that they are. And I have no idea how to do that. That's beyond me. But you're absolutely right. And many of those old photos come out of the Historical Society archives, where there is literally thousands of photographs of what went on in agriculture, and in fact, everything else in Wisconsin history. So I had the privilege of digging out a lot of those, and my editor, Kate Thompson, helped a lot in finding photographs as well. And we were bound determined in putting this book together. History has a reputation for being boring and putting everybody to sleep, and we all know
that. You're not going to do that.
Yeah, and we vowed that my writing is I try to have my writing as crisp as possible, and I tell a lot of stories, and I interviewed a lot of people so that it's more than just dates and names and places. But but as you say so very correctly, the photographs and the other visual materials in the book add a lot to the story, in my judgment.
Oh, they really tell a story. And I opened the book up. For me, it's kind of an interesting sidelight is that the first photo, black and white photo I looked at, was of the Singelkau family, who arrived from Mecklenburg, Germany, and settled near Madison. And Singelkau Road is a road that I have ridden and driven. I grew up practically on Singelkau Road, so it was a lot of fun for me to see that.
And I think a lot of people, as they page through this book, will be able to make similar kinds of connections.
It really is a lot of fun. Well, maybe... the history, as you say, it's almost impossible it is impossible to do it in one volume. But tell us what you've got here in the book. How is it?
What I've tried to do was to look at a number of what we might call eras in the history of Wisconsin agriculture. And I start with the last glacier. And that people roll their eyes and say, that's got to be the most boring thing in the world. Well, it's not.
No.
25,000 years ago, which is a day or two ago, this great sheet of ice moved slowly from Canada, Hudson's Bay, and it gouged out Lake Superior. It created Lake Michigan. It created Green Lake and Lake Winnebago. And it formed what we have as a state. It created the valleys, created the hills. It left behind some wonderfully good land. It left behind some land that was not so wonderful. And that's the kind of a farm that I grew up on the terminal moraine where the glacier stopped in central Wisconsin. I, as a farm kid, was not aware, of course, of the glacier and what it's in terms of the academic part of it, but I was experiencing it every year because it had, our farm was a hilly, stony, sandy farm, and I will never forget my father in the spring of the year when we would be out there with a team of horses in the stone boat picking stones, he would brush back his hat and say, well, if nothing else ever grows on this farm, we can always expect a good crop of stones. And he was so right because the frost brought up a new bunch of stones every year. And one of the reasons I'm sitting in this chair today and not out picking stones is that that was not one of my favorite activities.
Well, you know, and you have a diagram. This is the best diagram I think I've ever seen, to be perfectly honest, of the various lobes of the glacier.
I looked
at that and wow.
I did a lot of research with that. And it is, in my estimation, if you're going to understand the foundations of Wisconsin agriculture, you've got to understand where the glacier was and where it wasn't. Yeah. Southwestern Wisconsin, the so-called driftless area, was not visited by this last glacier, which, by the way, began receding 10,000 years ago. And the farm that I own now, which is just a couple of miles from my home farm, is still right on the terminal moraine. And I have 60 acres of oak woods, hilly as all get out. Never ever saw the plow. And on that land are these huge, huge rocks, some of them as large as Volkswagen cars. And I tour people through there, and I say, you see that rock? That rock has been here for 10,000 years. And the comment is, y'all right.
It has been. Well, you know, it's not just about 10,000 years ago that you're writing about here.
Oh, that's true. That's the beginning. Because as the glacier slowly receded north and melted, one of the things it did, it created this huge lake of glacial water, meltwater in central Wisconsin. And, of course, that's just to the west of the farm that I have now near Wild Rose. And that area, I'll never forget this either. As a kid growing up, of course, the lake had drained down through the dells at mm-hmm. one time. And it left behind sand, the sand with about 10 feet down the aquifer water. But nobody knew how to do irrigation much in those days. And so that land was worth about $10 an acre. And if you bought 40 acres, they made you take another 40. And just think about it, that's worth thousands of dollars an acre now, because that's the vegetable breadbasket of Wisconsin, peas and sweet corn and cucumbers and potatoes, which is a fascinating twist on history. It started out as an old glacial lake, and today it's this rich, rich area of vegetable production.
Yeah, and obviously you talk about vegetable production in the book.
Well, that's a very important part of our history. Of course, and I hope we get to my talking a little bit about how we got into dairy farming.
Yeah.
But dairy farming, milk and cheese and cows, is not all of it. There's a lot of our history that transcends, that went on at the same time and often before.
Before, yeah.
Because farmers, well, to just mention it quickly, when the first settlers began coming in here, and that was Well, the French came in here first, of course, and they weren't interested in farming. They were interested in fur trading, and in transforming all of these heathen Native Americans into Christians. Those were their two goals. They were missionaries and fur traders, and Jean Nicolet, which is he was the first Frenchman to arrive, and he came to a place north of Green Bay in 1634. Now that's a day or two ago.
Yeah,
1634, and then he followed the Fox River and then the portage over from the Fox to the Wisconsin and down to Prairie du Chien, where Prairie du Chien is now. So Green Bay became our first city, and of course Nicolet was not interested in farming. Most of these French weren't interested in farming. There wasn't much farming going on at all until, of course, I've got to mention Native Americans. We think they
farmed.
Yeah, they did a lot of farming. I have a whole chapter in here on Native American farming, which I didn't know as well as I ought to. I did a lot of research to dig all of that out. They did a lot of garden farming, and we have the mistaken notion often that all they did was hunt and fish, and of course they did that. But they also were pretty fair gardeners, pretty fair farmers. They were our first farmers.
Well, the people, you know, you talked about the Native Americans. The people came, as you and I have talked about this a little in the past, so we had kind of a melting pot here.
Well, here's how it happened. By the 1820s, lead was discovered in southwestern Wisconsin. So that's a kind of a separate story. And the lead miners came up the Mississippi River, some of them from Kentucky, from other southern states, and they began mining lead in the 1820s. This is before we became a territory. We became a territory in 1836. And it was after the first... after we became a territory, and after the first survey was done, and that first survey took place in 1832, and once the survey was done, then the land was available for sale. Mm-hmm. And who were the first people to come here? Not the Germans and the Norwegians and the Irish, but the Yankees, the New Yorkers. And that's a very important part of the story, because these New Yorkers, most all of them had been dairy farmers in New York, because New York was, at that time, was the premier dairy state in the nation. But these New Yorkers had worn out their land, as the story goes. And when you wear out your land in those days, what you did was you moved further west. And so they moved on to Ohio and Indiana and then up into Wisconsin. And this sounds a little silly, but that's the case at the time. As you move west, I don't know what they did when they got to California. They sort of looked and said, oh, my gosh, we're going to turn around and figure out something different. Well, these New Yorkers discovered that Wisconsin, southern Wisconsin land, was just wonderfully rich, never had been plowed, and they had seen... these New Yorkers, what was going on in Ohio, Indiana, and Illinois, and that was wheat growing. That was a time when the population was increasing in the country, and these New Yorkers began growing wheat, thousands of acres of wheat. Southern Wisconsin was
covered
wheat everywhere. And one interesting aside, those little mill ponds that you see scattered are all around southern Wisconsin, with some of the old mills still standing.
Mm-hmm.
They were constructed in response to all of that wheat, because it was easier to move flour than it was to move wheat kernels.
Sure.
And so that is just absolutely a fascinating part of our history. In 1860, the year before the Civil War, Wisconsin was the number two state in the nation in the production of wheat. I mean, we knew how to grow wheat. And, of course, not really, because they were practicing as they did in New York. They didn't know about fertilization. They didn't know about crop rotation. They planted the wheat on the same field year after year after year. And they weren't aware of how to deal with insect damage and rusts and all that kind of stuff. And that's what eventually did it in.
Jerry Apps, our guest today. He is the author of many books, including the one we're talking about today, Wisconsin Agriculture, A History. And I haven't given the let me give the number here. If you want to join in, question or comment or experience to share, number to call 1-800-642-1234. Give a call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page and our Facebook page title, The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller. Cheyenne Lentz, our on-air producer today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, we're taking a look at Wisconsin Agriculture, A History. That's the title of the book Jerry Apps wrote. And again, join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And Jerry, you were just kind of getting into the beginning of dairy farming. Dairy farming, it took a while to really get going here in the state.
You know, it did. And when wheat began failing, shortly after the end of the Civil War, which was 1865 to 1870, that period of time where the transition was taking place from wheat growing to something else. And it was at that time the Wisconsin farmers were looking around to how in the world can we make a living on the land that wheat's not working. Some of them pulled up stakes and they moved to Kansas, Nebraska, North and South Dakota, and continued growing wheat. But most of them stayed here, and they looked around as to what to do, and there were a number of crops that came along, barley and hops, because we were making beer big time by that time. I wrote a book on the history of the brewing industry, and we had 400 breweries in Wisconsin by the beginning of Prohibition, and breweries need a lot of hops and a lot of barley. We began growing tobacco. Here in southern Wisconsin and in the Vernon County area. And sugar beets became popular. We had sheep, and we started growing potatoes in central Wisconsin on that sandy land where I grew up. And just an aside, when I was a kid growing up on the farm, we grew 20, still, this is in the 30s and early 40s, we grew 20 acres of potatoes, which we planted by hand, cultivated by hand, hoed by hand, picked by hand. Our country school had 2 weeks of potato vacation in October, so all the kids could pick potatoes. What kind of a vacation was that, you would wonder? And we started in the pea growing industry with pea canning, and can you believe it, but we were number two in the nation in 1908 in growing hemp. Really?
Yeah.
Industrial hemp. And then cranberries. Oh, my gosh. Cranberries started in 1860 in my home county, Washera County, just north of Berlin. So all of that was swirling around as these farmers now began to listen to their New York neighbors who said, you know, if you want to make a living on the land, if you want to stay here, it's the dairy cow that's going to be your future. Oh, right, the dairy cow. That's women's work. It's women who should take care of these smelly, dirty cows. I mean, we are macho men. We know how to grow wheat. We know how to drive horses. And now the reaper was popular. We know how to do all of this. We should take care of cows. You got to be kidding. William Dempster Hoard was the leader in the movement to convince these reluctant wheat farmers that dairy farming might be in their future. And slowly, we began to turn the minds of the macho men to believing that, yes, indeed, maybe we can raise cattle. And previously, all the cheese making, the little bit that there was done in the farm kitchen, as well as butter making. And these men, once they turned their minds around, well, we're not going to do it in the kitchen. We're going to build a separate factory. And that was the beginning of the cheese factory in Wisconsin. And interesting enough, just to add the end to that little part of the story, it was in 1910 that Wisconsin wrested away from New York State the title of premier dairy state in the nation. And in many ways, we have never lost that lead, especially in cheese making.
Nick in Brilliant has a question or a comment. Hi, Nick. Thank you for calling.
so much, Larry. I'm so grateful for two living legends having this show. This is so amazing. I was wondering, actually, what our title was now with California. And then, on a side note, I was driving from Madison, or from Janesville to Appleton, and my friend was not from Wisconsin, and she kept on saying, there's corn everywhere. And I'm like, yeah, this state is, like, we have agriculture. It's a huge part of our state, and it was just kind of interesting that you guys were just talking about that. But I was wondering about our comparison to California now.
Yeah, let me see if I can help. These are statistics from last year, 2014. We were, and I'll go a little bit beyond your question, we were first in cheese production. We were first in corn for silage. We were first in cranberry production. We were first in mink pelt production. We haven't talked about that. We were first in snap beans. We were first in, can you believe it, in milk goats and goat cheese. And we were first in ginseng. And then secondly, we were second in milk production, second in oats, second in the number of milk cows. California has more milk cows and has more milk production, but we, in 2014, we produced 2.8 billion pounds of cheese. That's a whale of a lot of cheese. And I ask audiences when I talk to them about this, I ask them, what's the leading type of cheese that's produced? And most people say, well, it's cheddar. It's not. It's mozzarella.
No.
Pizza has transformed the cheese industry in many ways. Mm-hmm. Also, we have some 400 or 500 different types of cheese, but that's a whole other story as we look to the future.
And it's you know, it's possible that we'll come back.
Well,
in terms of the
California
production.
California is in the third or the fourth year of a very serious drought. You only have to watch the news, the television news, to see the enormous fires that are burning north of San Francisco right now. And anyone who knows anything about dairy farming knows that a lot of water is required. Not only for the cattle themselves, but for the feed that's necessary in taking care of them. And so California is really struggling. And I think you're right, Larry. We could very well, in a year or so, if that drought continues, be back totally in first place in dairy production. They don't hold a candle to us yet in cheese production. They're trying. And they're bragging about their what do they call it, their happy cows or some such a thing they talk about.
Our cows are happier, Nick. Thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, appreciate the call. Well, and you should also point out to your friend, by the way, not only corn, but there were probably some other fields you may or may not have known what they were, but they were low-growing plants that are green but turning a golden color now.
Yeah, we grow a lot of soybeans.
And that's a soybean, and there's a lot of soybeans out there now.
A lot of soybeans, yep.
Yeah. Jim and Wanakee, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello, Larry and Jerry. I'm a longtime follower of Jerry, and I'm 76 years old, farmed my whole life in Dane County, and just love to hear your stories, Jerry, and I've heard a lot of them, and I got most of your books, and I'm actually going up to your book classes in Door County October the 17th.
Oh, great, yeah.
And I'm with Schumacher Farm Park in Wanakee, and we're trying to bring back farming from the 20s and 30s, so we're going to build a museum there and put all of our old equipment in it. And you may even be a part of this in helping us.
Yeah, that's a great place. I spoke out at Schumacher Farm earlier this spring. I've shared a bunch of my stories. And as long as we're talking about places where you can see in person, so to speak, some of this old farm equipment, and hear me at the same time if you'd like to. On Saturday, on the 19th, I'm at Stonefield Village in Cassville, where I'm talking about Wisconsin agricultural history. And Stonefield has a pretty decent collection of early farm machinery as well. including some reapers and early hay balers and early threshing machines and that sort of thing. So I'm talking 11:30 at Stonefield Village, and then in the afternoon I'm sharing from my book, Whispers in Shadows. And as long as I'm on a roll talking about where I'm going to be, on the 23rd of September, I will be at 6 o'clock at the Patterson Memorial Library in Wild Rose, my hometown, talking about Wisconsin agriculture. And on the 26th of September, from 10:30 to 2, I'm at Dregney's in Westby. And October 4th, I'm 1 to 3 at the Reader's Realm Bookstore in Montello, talking about ag history. I've got a bunch more, but I'm just going to mention those few right now.
And we have your site, too. You should mention your site.
Oh, yeah, I should mention my website. If you want to find out what I'm up to and read more about my books and reviews and all that kind of thing, it's JerryApps, JerryApps.com, JerryApps.com. And there, and I write a weekly blog, which you're welcome to sign up for. It's free. Comes cluttering up your emails on Monday morning. on my blog, I have a list of where I'm speaking for the next month or two, and I've got a bunch of stuff lined up for October and November.
And Jim, it sounds like you got a good project that you're working on.
Yeah, I do, and we're trying to teach the young people how farming was in the 20s and 30s, which Jerry does too, of course. And otherwise we'll lose all that, you know.
Yeah, that's so terribly important. Even my own grandkids who've grown up in the city, I can remember so well a few years ago, one of my grandsons, we were working out in the garden, and I was digging carrots, and he couldn't believe that carrots came out of the ground. And the second thing he couldn't believe is that they came in all different sizes. Oh, my gosh.
Jim, thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate the call very much. Oh, man. Sam in Evansville, your turn. Hi, Sam.
Hi. I just want to see what Jerry's opinion is on the factory farming, the monoculture of all the crops. And I just wanted to point out, too, that thanks to all this farming, the area that we live in southern Wisconsin, which is historically tall grass prairie, is now the most endangered ecosystem in North America.
Yeah. Well, I need a bit of a disclaimer, and then I'll try and say something more. Somebody asked me the other day when I was speaking at Old World Wisconsin about something very similar, and it's kind of maybe a cynical answer, but it goes something like this. It takes me forever to figure out what the history of Wisconsin is, and when I'm looking to the future, I'm baffled as much as most people. Having said that, I'm an old retired professor of agriculture, so I'm supposed to know something about these things. We have in Wisconsin a diversity of dairy farms in terms of size. We have, there's one at Rosendale. It's something like 8,000. However, most people don't realize that the average number of cows per farm, what would you guess? It's 117 last year.
Yeah.
So that suggests that we have a really wonderfully large group of organic farmers who tend to have smaller farms. And we also have an Amish community that's substantial, and they have smaller farms. I should also say, and I'm not here necessarily to defend nor to criticize the large farms. There's a bit of an erroneous notion out there, though, that comes around to the fact that people believe that all of those large farms are owned by some corporate entity someplace. By and large, the vast majority of them are family-owned. Mm-hmm. And it's two or three families that are involved. I spoke at Farm Technology Days a couple of weeks ago, and that's a huge farm near Sun Prairie. It's 6,000 acres. And they milk 4,000 cows, if I remember correctly, and that's several generations of the same family. So that part of we need to understand. But to speak directly to your concern, we've got to be. And I'm working on a book right now on water,
mm-hmm.
and there's no question about it. as we look to the future, and that future is like a decade ahead, we had better pay attention to how we deal with our water. Only look at California and see what's happening there to know what happens when the rain shuts off. And we have been so blessed here in the Midwest. We take water so much for granted. We got to watch it. Water is a precious commodity, and I'll stop preaching right now about that.
thank you, Sam, for calling. I want to give some others a chance to join in. Wallace and Weyerhaeuser up next. Wallace, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Elton. Harry, and to your guest. I just had to get in here because what he is telling, I am so well acquainted with. The rocks and the hills and the gullies. In a few weeks, I'm going to be 93 years old. And the witness that I have seen in the changing of crops and the process of raising these crops is appalling. Now, he mentioned the glacier, what the glacier has left. Perhaps he's been up here, I don't know, but if he has...
I have.
Oh, the Blue Hills country?
Yes.
Okay, north of Birchwood, there's over 500 pothole lakes left by the glacier. 500 of them.
Yeah.
Over every other hill. And so, okay, so now, here and there, you will find an area of a pretty good farmland. For the most part is, you pick those doggone boulders, you know? Yeah. And I had rock piles and rock piles, and I bought the family farm after World War II, and I have donated them now to a wildlife club that's rejuvenating the trout stream that have silted in. And you're talking about the crops. I remember the green beans for Stokely's, the pea crops for canning. And early on, we built our first silo in 1928, and there was two varieties of corn then. There was a Minnesota 13 that was available handy, and Golden Glow, and that had a 120-day maturity.
Well, how in the world did you get 120 days up in Weyerhaeuser?
Yeah. Well, at that time there, it made wonderful silage.
Because we had problems in central Wisconsin with corn maturity dates.
Oh, man. Well, see, now here's a guy who's... Wallace, you're going to have to get a hold of Jerry's book for sure, because you're going to really enjoy... looking through it, and boy, he's about the age the last book. He was born about the time of the last book on the history of agriculture came out.
That's about right. Yep.
That's just about right. Oh man, thank you so much. I want to give others a chance to join in, Wallace. So I'm going to turn to Jackie in Sun Prairie next. And Jackie, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, I grew up 5 miles south of the Blue Hills in Weyerhaeuser. It's kind of an interesting coincidence. But my question is, I do know that your farming has changed an extraordinary amount. And I understand from the farmer's point of view what had to be done over the years in order to make the living, so to speak. And I'm wondering about the popularization of cheese across the country since World War II. My uncle was involved in a lot of the larger companies that became larger and larger as the decades went past in getting cheese popularized. With the Miss Wisconsin cheese and that sort of thing. Do you have any knowledge of that or perhaps some history that was written of that period?
I do talk about that in my book. And it,
great.
Allison Dairyland and the Milk Marketing Board have been very staunch proponents of a marketing cheese across the country. But the thing, one of the things that really changed after World War II was pizza. Some of the soldiers came back from Italy, and they had the report on this strange dish that they were eating. That it was pizza pie, and their folks said, "I never heard of a pie that had tomatoes on it." and cheese. And, of course, that had a lot to do with pushing the cheese industry along. Also, all of these specialty cheeses now, they're everywhere, and they're wonderful. And that's helped the cheese industry move along as well.
Yeah, some really good high-quality cheeses produced here, obviously, in Wisconsin. Jackie, thank you. Carolyn in Oconomowoc, give you a chance here with a question. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, I'm just doing my family history, and my great-grandfather arrived in Oak Creek in 1868. He arrived on April 20th, I have the ship manifest, and he purchased a farm on the first week in May in 1868. I'm wondering how the heck he did that. And then he kept the farm for quite a while, and they had a side business in of thrashing. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to know what crops that would be, because my mother's brother was killed in the thrashing machine accident there in 1924.
Yeah.
So I just wondered what.
Well, here are the crops, and I personally was involved on a thrashing crew when I was a kid, so I can speak from personal experience. This would have been in the 30s. And 40s. But in those days, what we were thrashing were oats, some wheat, some rye, and a little bit of barley. But mostly oats.
Oats was it.
Because we used the oats that were made fantastic feed for both horses and cattle. And the straw was bedding in the dairy barns all over the place. And the thrash machine is a dangerous machine. In those days, all of the belts and pulleys were running free. There weren't any covers on them. I can understand how people would easily get hurt. We were very careful around the thrash machine. It was clearly the biggest machine that ever arrived on our farm. And in fact, my dad owned one, so I was very closely involved with the old thrash machine.
When I was a little kid, I can remember actually crawling through a thrashing machine and having fun playing as, I don't know, I was probably 4 or 5 years old.
It's a big machine.
Big machine. And so thank you, Carolyn, so much. So oats and wheat, oats primarily, though,
yep,
would have been it. But you should take a look at Jerry's book, because you're going to learn a whole lot more if you want to learn some more about what went on back in those days and right up to the present. Jerry, it's always fun. I know this book is going to do well, and I highly recommend it. Thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah,
today.
Thank you very much, Larry. And go to my website, people, if you want to read more, jerryapps.com. You'll learn more than you want to know.
And apps is APPS.
APPS.
Well,
yes.
It's like app, you know, on your smartphone.
I'd like to sue somebody who's stolen my name and make it into an application, but that's a whole nother topic.
We'll take that up next time. Thanks, Jerry.
You're welcome.
Jerry Apps, he'll be back, I'm sure of that. We'll talk with him again about whatever topic, whatever book he's coming up with next. You never know. And of course, you never know what Darren Bush is going to talk about either. Well, kind of, you know, he's going to talk about paddling of one sort or another. And he's coming up next year as we talk about actually developing some technologies or the developing technologies for paddling and a whole lot more. Are you a canoeist or a kayaker? If you're not, you should stay tuned anyway, because we got lots of interesting and fun tales to tell here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.